You're listening to the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options, facebook.com/theoptionsinsider, or via questions@theoptionsinsider.com.
This is the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. Before we start today's show, investors should know that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting www.optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. OIC makes no recommendation with respect to any financial firm. OIC does not make any warranty as to the accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the continued availability or existence of information created or maintained by others. Multiple leg strategies involve multiple commission charges. Opinions and strategies expressed by others are not necessarily those of OIC, nor does OIC endorse, warrant, or guarantee products, services, or information described or offered by such firms. Commissions, fees, margins, interest, and taxes have not been included in any of the examples used in this show. These costs impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential consequences. None of the information presented in this show should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. Welcome to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. OIC was created in 1992 to educate investors and their financial advisors about the benefits and risks of exchange-traded equity options. OIC offers a variety of resources to those interested in learning more about options, including live seminars, webcasts, and podcasts. Check out www.optionseducation.org for more information. Now here's your host, OIC's Director of Retail Education, Joe Burgoyne.
Welcome to OIC's Wide World of Options. Thanks for joining us for today's show. Let's get started with industry happenings.
It's time to get a handle on the latest developments from the world of options. It's time for industry happenings.
We'll take three listener questions in today's industry happening segment. Our first one comes in from KBX32, and he asks, what's the cheapest way to hedge my portfolio with options? A great question, but one that actually has me asking questions in return. What's the makeup of your portfolio? Are you trying to only hedge the equity or index portion of that portfolio? Are you looking for short-term protection or longer-term protection? And what are you willing to spend? Now, I realize you did reference, you know, what's the cheapest way, but, you know, how much you're willing to spend on insurance and protection is always a very important question. So for those investors working with an advisor, I would strongly urge you to ask these very questions. You know, what's the best or cheapest way to hedge my portfolio? And then get into the nitty-gritty details and see what your advisor has to say. I'll offer my two cents on this. A couple different ideas. First would be the collar strategy, where we're long the portfolio or the underlying, short a call and long a put. That can be an inexpensive way to hedge a portfolio, but the upside is capped because we've sold a call. So unless you adjust strikes, if the market's taking off, you know, you are going to give up upside. But you're getting your downside protection at a relatively inexpensive price, depending on the strike prices you choose. Other approaches could be straight out protective puts, where you're long the underlying, and then you buy downside protection with the purchase of puts. Again, that gets back to a cost issue, and what are you willing to spend? Another couple ideas would be the vertical bear put spread, and possibly even a put back spread, where you're short the at-the-money puts and long far more out-of-the-money puts. But both the put back spread and the vertical bear put spread do have, you know, certain risks associated with them. So be sure to check out and analyze what those risks are, either through the tools that are offered at optionseducation.org or in your conversation with an advisor. Collars, protective puts, bear put spreads and put back spreads, all hedge strategies that I'd suggest, you know, you take a look at when considering how to hedge your portfolio. Our second question comes from J-E-L-I, Jelly. Can I buy longer term options than LEAPS? Well, LEAPS are the listed option with the furthest out maturity or expiration. Depending on the time of year, and new options are listed in the fall, LEAP maturities can extend out about 3 years. Now, one other type of option you may have heard about, but it's typically not for the retail investor, is a flex option. These options are traded on the exchange, but typically trade in a large volume. Basically, they're customized options with customized strikes and maturities. One other quick point, Jelly. Please know, when you're talking LEAPS or any longer-dated options, please be informed of the implied volatility levels, that pricing component, implied volatility. It is extremely important in those longer-dated options. And finally, our third question comes from JH4ISU. And the question is, what qualifications do I need to work in the industry as a trader? And is that a career path I'd even want to consider? Well, I'll say, JH4, thanks for the question. Let me start with your second question first. Is becoming a trader a career path to consider? Well, I would start actually with an intangible. Is trading a passion of yours, a true passion? I'd say, yes, consider it as a potential career path if indeed, you know, trading is a true passion. Now, we know passion alone doesn't make trading a viable career. We realize that, but it's going to be very difficult because technology has replaced countless trading positions. But there's still certainly trading positions that do exist. They're just far fewer than there used to be. And that's why I think this element of passion, if you have it, may help you maybe get over the hump. The whole idea of technology, because it's so prevalent in finance now, would be the area I'd suggest you move in terms of qualifications to put together to enable you to have a career in trading, maybe a degree in financial engineering, something along those lines, and post-education designations can really be a differentiator. Things like a CFA, Certified Financial Analyst, the CAIA designation, or a CFP. Now, that's more, you know, along the line of a financial advisor, certified financial planner. All of those designations can set you apart from others. So I hope that's, you know, a little bit helpful. Jade, for I wish you luck in deciding on your career path. And that wraps up today's industry happenings.
It's time to break down the latest option strategies. It's time for Strategy Spotlight.
We are pleased to welcome Roma Caldwell-Steinke, instructor at the Options Institute today, to our Strategy Spotlight segment on OIC's Wide World of Options. Roma, thanks so much for making the time to join us today.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here, Joe. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. Always good to talk to you and talk options. So how about if, you know, before we get into today's topic, why don't you tell our listeners a little about your career path in the finance business?
Okay, sure, of course. So, you know, I started in the industry right out of college. So we're talking about 1985. Started my career on the Pacific Stock Exchange, and I worked for the exchange, was a floor broker, and then in 1999, I started as a market maker for a company called Group One. And so Group One's still trading today, and their first day in business and trading was my first day as a market maker trading for them. And in 1990, I moved to Chicago, started trading in Chicago, and then was a designated primary market maker for about 11 years. In 1994, we started college recruiting. So one of the things that goes along with college recruiting is education. So there were a group of us that started all the education for Group One and our market makers, which was about a two-year program for somebody to be a market maker. And they still use the same education program today. But that's really what got me interested in, you know, this end of the business and teaching people about trading. And instead of doing market makers now, we do mostly retail and some, you know, other kinds of investors. But, you know, mainly we're doing retail investing. And it's, you know, of course, very exciting to meet, you know, all the people that are interested in trading options and just kind of guiding them through that process and watching them become successful. So that's kind of my story. Yeah, so I've been at the Option
Institute. That's a great story.
Yeah, so I've been here for, you know, almost 3 years now.
Well, they're lucky to have you. And listeners, you hear that? You know, the wealth of information coming from Roma. And, you know, it's we're just going to have some fun here talking about earnings and options. So why don't we get to that? You know, we've got quarterly earnings announcements, and then we've got the wonderful listed options product. Do those two, you know, do they belong in the same conversation?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important. You know, of course, options are very versatile, but there's many things that you can do with them. And, you know, one of them is, you know, speculate on these earnings. But more importantly, it is a really great tool for those that want to reduce risk, you know, or even hedge what they already have going into earnings. So there's many things that we can use, especially like either, you know, you want to make that income or you just want to protect, you know, whatever you own going into these earnings.
And so when we talk about, you know, earnings, do you suggest specific strategies? Are there multiple approaches? Do you like to just stick to one, two, or three? How do you approach options and earnings?
Yeah, so first of all, it's all about tools that you're using. So when I go into earnings, now depending on whether or not I have an existing position that's coming into earnings or I want to put on a position going into earnings, I try to use various tools to help me make good decisions. One is, you know, looking at implied volatility. So I always go back in history and I look at all the earnings season, you know, earnings probably in the last 2 years, and I look at what happened to implied volatility.
Can I interrupt just for,
sure, no problem.
Can I interrupt for just 1 second? So, okay, how do, you know, our listeners get to find that information going back, you know, a year or two? What be specific if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, no problem. Now, if you wanted to go back, of course, there's always Bloomberg, but that's a little bit difficult for most retail traders to
that's
have.
That's difficult for me.
Right. So, but there's most brokerage houses will have that information. You'll be able to, you know, look at a graph. And they should be able to, you know, you should be able to look at what that implied volatility is. You know, one of the tools that I use is, you know, is LiveVol. And that's in part because the brokerage firm that I have does not, I don't have access to that information. But it's out there. Another really nice source is, you know, the CBOE blog. So we do, going into earnings season, we do kind of look at, you know, what happened last earnings season and what also, what was the average move of the last 2 years when earnings season came in. And those tools are very important because one of the things, especially if you're looking at earnings and history of earnings, a lot of times you'll be able to say, you know, when earnings have happened in the past, when the stock goes down, it's a greater percent than when the stock goes up. And so when you're creating this position, you want to be mindful of the fact that when this stock makes a move down, that it's going to be, you know, it could be a bigger move than you're going to see on the upside. So when you're selecting strikes, you're going to be like selecting strikes based off of that historical knowledge that you have.
Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. And so volatility and those types of tools help mm-hmm. you to then ascertain maybe what type of strategy. And then you talked about you may have a strategy going into earnings or not. You know, that's something else we can talk about. But what about right. the strategies themselves?
Yeah. So I'll just tell you like the strategies that I generally like to use. So I like to do spreads. That's probably my favorite strategy. And the reason I do spreads is depending on whether I want to buy a call option or sell a call option. So the first part of when I put on a spread is what I call the action. So if I'm bullish and I feel like the stock is going to have a nice move to the upside, I might buy a call. And but a lot of times going into these earnings, that implied volatility is going to be, you know, a little bit higher. So I might be buying that expensive option. So instead of just buying that expensive option, I might, most of the time I do this where I will sell an out of the money option. And there's two things that, you know, are powerful about that. One is that I actually get to select where I get out of my position. So I buy that call. I sell another call. If it moves up, you know, and both of those options end up getting, you know, exercised and signed, I'm completely out of the position. But the most important thing is not only am I buying implied volatility, I'm also selling implied volatility. So I'm actually reducing the cost of that purchase by doing both of those at the same time. So that is usually the kind of strategy that I'm looking at. So I always like to use these spreads. If I do think that implied volatility is, you know, is high and I want to, the action is that I want to, you know, sell it and hopefully the stock doesn't move and I collect that decay, well, I'm going to still buy an out of the money option just to protect, you know, that loss. I don't want to, you know, I can't sell a naked call, so I'm going to, you know, protect it by buying that out of the money call. And again, you know, it does two things, right? So you're protecting yourself with that implied volatility number, but at the same time, you're creating what that risk is and what that potential profit could be. So spreads are my favorite going into these. But there's, you know, a lot of other strategies you can use.
I love the idea of spreads myself as well. And I think you raise, like from my perspective, a really important point. You were describing almost two different types of trades, the delta mm-hmm. trade, where you're long a call or a call spread, and then the volatility trade. Is there, and then of course, you know, in your first example, you talked about just getting a long call. So mm-hmm. yeah, lots of things come to mind, you know, in terms of formulating an opinion on the underlying. You want to offer any insights into how you go about that first?
Well, I'll say that for me personally, I usually I only follow five stocks at a time. I don't have a huge portfolio, but I trade these five stocks and I know them pretty well. And so that's kind of where I would start is, you know, following stocks. I like liquid stocks because it's easy to get in and out of them. So when I'm making a choice of what I'm going to trade, it's usually based off of these are the products that I like to trade. These are the products that I know. These are the products that, you know, I've consistently made money in. And these are the kind of strategies that that I use. So I think it's really important that, you know, do a little bit of homework to decide what you're going to, you know, what you want to trade. You know, a stock that I'm really starting to get into is a real very volatile stock. And so I've just been following it and following earnings to kind of decide what that strategy would look like. For those that are kind of just getting started, you know, if you have a virtual trading account, try trading earnings going, you know, using that virtual trading account also is really great way to kind of get to know the stocks that you might want to trade.
In your experiences, have you found any cyclicality in earnings announcements from different companies where, say, you know, the third quarter each year, you get a particular move one way or the other? Have you found anything like that, or, you know, more just one quarter at a time?
You know, that is kind of an interesting question. And I don't really look at the, you know, the correlations. You know, I will look at, like, what did it do last third quarter to see that. But I think for me, the most important thing is kind of looking at what that accumulation is. So what is that, you know, over the last 2 years? What was that percent move in the stock? The other thing that I was going to mention when it comes to, you know, gauging, you know, what particular strategy that you're going to use. So the third thing that I look at, besides implied volatility, besides these percent moves up and down, is that at the money straddle. And I use that as a gauge for, you know, what the market is kind of telling me the movement in this particular stock is going to be going into earnings. And that's just another tool, and you don't need a graph to look at that. You just look at that at the money straddle.
So for our listeners who might be, you know, new to the option space, mm-hmm. talk about that at the money straddle and what it may be showing you about what the market anticipates, if you would.
Yeah, so absolutely. So that at the money straddle, so of course, if we have a stock that's trading 100, you have that 100 strike. And so you have a call and a put. Both of them have a 50 delta. So both of them have a 50% chance of being in or out of the money. But what happens to the premiums of each one of those options is it really is kind of based off of supply and demand and market forces. So if more buyers are coming in, you know, those options are going to get a little more expensive. If more sellers come in, those options are going to get a little bit cheaper. But going into earnings in particular, that straddle, so if you look at where the call is trading, and you look at where the put is trading, and you take both of those premiums and you add them together, that is a wonderful indication that the marketplace is telling you that that movement is going to be somewhere at or above that total price of that straddle, right? So when you're looking at that straddle, the first thing if you buy a straddle, what you want to look at is what that break-even point is. And so that break-even point is really kind of the indicator that this stock is going to either move up to that point or it might move a little bit further than that. So when I'm
And a quick example position, for our listeners, mm-hmm. $100 stock, price to straddle, and give us a break-even yeah. point if you would.
So let's just say we price this, that straddle, and we're going to say that the call is trading $4, the put may be trading about, you know, $4.25, $4.50. So let's say we're looking at an $8.50 move. So on the downside, I know that they're telling me that the stock might go down to like 91.5. And on the upside, it's telling me that the stock might go to 108.5, right? So the next thing that I might look at is What is that 95 put look like? That just out of the money 95 put look like? Or what is that 105 call look like? And is that also telling me that there's going to be this movement to 8.5? Or can I use that information, that $8.50 move, and decide to buy, you know, that 105 call? And, you know, maybe it's priced in line, maybe it's a little bit cheaper, but I might want to buy it. And again, I like to do spreads, so I might spread that off with that 1010 call on the upside. So what I end up with is now I end up with a spread where I bought that 105, 110 spread. I bought it for $1. So all I needed to do is to move to 106. But the straddle's telling me it could go to 108.5. So those are the ways that I use that particular tool when I'm looking at that straddle.
Love it, Roma. I mean, honestly, we could talk about this. I could talk to you about this for 2 days, I think. And I hope our listeners, and, you know, so many really great points. You got a handful of stocks. So pick one, two, or three of them, and then consider these ideas that, Rome was talking about. You know, the implied volatility, the percentage moves up or down with previous earnings, and then that all-important at-the-money straddle. And look at it for one, two, or three different, you know, earnings cycles, and get comfortable with the option numbers. Couple more things before we wrap. Just so, you know, we're talking delta, we're talking volatility. I think, you know, on the delta side, we're talking vertical spreads. If you decided to basically trade the implied volatility, going back to, you know, the charts on the SIBO website, our website at optionseducation.org, what would be a, you know, say you wanted to sell, you know, the implied volatility, but, you know, with protection, what right. kind of strategy might you suggest?
Yeah, so that kind of gets back to, you know, I'll tell you a strategy that I like to use, and that is, again, when I'm looking at a strategy that I want to use, I will look at the core strategy. And so this core strategy would be a strangle. And I like to say sell strangles. So let's say I'm looking again. Let's say we're looking at that $100 stock, and the price movement is saying that it's going to move 8.5 up or 8.5 down, right? So I might decide I'm going to look at that 110 call, and then, of course, the 90 put, and look at selling that, right? But again, that's my action. That's the position I want to have on. But there's some risk in there. So the second thing that I'm going to do is, like, how do I manage that risk? And so then I might look at buying that further out-of-the-money call to kind of protect that risk that I'm putting on. But this, the idea here, right, is as long as the stock stays in between that 110 and that 90 strike, I'm going to, like, collect that premium. And so, I mean, basically what I've just said to you is an iron condor. I just kind of looked at that a little bit differently. So I like to look at what strategy do I want to use? And the second thing I ask myself is how am I going to manage that risk? So when you're putting on these strategies, you know, either buying a call, selling a call, or buying a put, selling a put, or doing a strangle, you always want to know, like, what is the risk that I'm going to take? Because you are going into earnings, and a lot of unexpected things happen, even with all this information that you have.
I can't believe we've been talking for 20 minutes, Rome. It seems like a minute and a half.
Really?
I mean, it's incredible.
That went fast.
Well, it sure did. So so I think we will wrap it up, although, as I say, I could talk to you for days. And, you know, your experience and wisdom in the markets is just priceless. So thank you. Thank you. Anything else you want to just mention to our listeners?
No, I think that's it. I mean, I really think that for anyone that's, you know, trading, it's so important to be using tools and understanding those tools. And then, you know, take what you think is like a logical outcome and then try to figure out what strategy you want to use, you know, around that. I also think it's so important that, you know, you manage that risk. And at the very least, know where you want to get in and out of a position before putting it on, because I think a lot of us, and I've done this myself, where I put something on and I think, you know, I wait to make a little, you know, an extra dollar, and, you know, and it goes down and I lose some money on that. So when you're looking at putting in a position, look at the full package, where you want to get in, where you want to get out. And if you can set up a position where it does both, that's even better.
Well, Roma, thanks again. And listeners, remember, Roma is an instructor at the Options Institute at the SIBO. We're also lucky enough to have her as an instructor for the OIC. So, Roma, just really thanks for making the time this morning to offer your thoughts on earnings and options, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, well, thank you, Joe, very much. And it was nice, you know, having an opportunity to do this. So for all of you out there, good trading.
It's time to meet the movers and shakers from the world of options. It's time for Profiles and Perspectives.
Joining us today for Profiles and Perspectives is Karan Soot, CEO at CBOE Vest. Karan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a very big fan of OIC. Thanks for the opportunity to speak here.
Well, you're very gracious. And, you know, as we get started, before we actually start to talk about the SIBO-Vest product, how about if you tell our listeners about yourself, maybe your career path and, you know, how you landed up maybe at Vest?
Sure. You know, I pretty much spent my entire career in the derivative space. I started out right out of university on the equity derivative desk of Barclays Capital, an English investment bank. And this was in London, servicing banks, clients across Europe. I did that for about 5 years before they shipped me out to the U.S., to New York, to be part of the same desk, the equity derivative desk, to build out the client base for America. And I did that for another 4 years before starting out at West. And you know, just to tie it out to West, which is what the company was called when we formed the company, and it's known as SIBO West today. You know, over the course of my time working on the sell side, on the investment banking side at Barclays, I was part of this team that developed basically option-based, equity-linked option-based products for the bank's clients. You know, this varied all the way from customized exotic contracts for institutional clients to, you know, package investments, such as the first ever ETN, or most relevant to this conversation, the first volatility ETN, the VXX product. And one key trend across all of this was we were increasingly taking strategies that have been used quite successfully by institutional investors and bringing them to a broader set of investors. And, you know, with the launch of the ETNs and just the general sort of resurgence in passive investing through index-based mutual funds and ETFs, I saw the potential for package product and option-based investing to be widely more easily accessible. And that was the reason, you know, Jeff and I got together and started West, which is known as SIBO West today.
And Karan, from a timeline perspective, when did you and Jeff get together to, you know, start Vest?
Yeah, so this is late 2012, early 2013. The first product that SIBO West came out with was the managed account offering, which gave access to option-based strategies, but directly in a customer's account. That launched late 2013.
Well, I think, you know, for those of us in the industry and for our listeners who may not know about, you know, daily option volume, as an industry, we do in the neighborhood of 16 to 17 million contracts a day. And we've been doing that range of volume for the last 4, 5, 6 years. And I think, you know, there are an awful lot of people who complain about options volume, but in such a low volatility environment, you know, our option volumes could have very well shrunk, in my opinion, if it really hadn't been for technology like you're talking about at Vest. And I think it's these products that get out, you know, to retail and self-directed investors, as opposed to just the institutional types you referred to, you know, these are the tools that have helped to drive, I think, or at least keep option volume where it is in such a low volatility environment.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. And you know, just to take that timeline further from when we started out, it was easier as a young company to start on the managed account space because, you know, before you get into the more packaged product funds and ETF space, for which you have to set up a lot of, you know, infrastructure and go through regulatory process, managed account is sort of relatively easier to bring to market. And so that was, you know, not surprisingly, our first product set. And we quickly realized that there were substantial operational and educational, and I'm sure you'll agree with that, educational hurdles to investors like you said, self-directed investors. But even, you know, I would say a big gap which bridges a self-directed investor on one side and an institutional investor on the other side, the massive fund marketplace serviced by financial advisors, even that entire space faces tremendous amount of both operational and educational burden when it comes to option-based investing. And like any sort of new age company, we embrace that challenge by using technology to solve for that. So we quickly realized that a lot of our early customers who were accessing these unique investments in a managed account, which is effectively implementing these option-based strategies directly in their accounts or their customers' accounts, were tripping over some complexities around options. And we embraced that and we developed tools, technology tools, which one, made it very relatively simple and easier to understand these investments, and then also, you know, take the step of implementing these investments with a few clicks of a button. So reducing as much as possible the friction from account opening to getting the appropriate amount of options levels, to be able to trade those investments, to be able to understand very straightforward in a simple manner, you know, if the option is being used for protection, how does it work, or if it's being used for leverage, how it works, or how it's being used for income, how it works, providing like visual cues to be able to comprehend that. And then, of course, you know, from a frictionless trading perspective, just clicking a button and being able to execute that. So effectively, our managed account offering, which we had first initially conceived to be a very high touch, you know, high support kind of a product, ended up being a very low touch with a lot of contextual information provided to the user through just a simple browser and then click to trade a capability. It became a technology-enabled managed account offering.
And to the credit of both you and Jeff and your team, I mean, so many comments there that to me just speak to the self-directed retail customer. You know, simple and easy, visual, you know, click the button. So, it, you know, everything is there at the disposal of that client or investor who really wants to get into a systematic approach with the options product. And, you know, you touched on a couple things also about, you know, the whole idea of, I think, your key areas of focus, the protection area, income, and growth. I mean, let's say an investor, you know, has decided on, okay, we want to get into protection mode. Could you walk me through, you know, possibly the approach that they may take through Cboevest if we're talking protection?
Maybe I'll, you know, also take a bit of a step back just to lay the foundation of, you know, how investors typically should think about options somewhat differently than how they think about other investments. And particularly because, you know, just the nature of options is different. You know, a stock doesn't have an expiry date. It doesn't have terms of reference like a strike price, which option has. So it essentially makes you rethink the paradigm around the way you think about investments. And then you can sort of contextualize it and say, okay, how does that, the way I am now thinking about protection, compared to how I would get it from an option versus how I would get it from, let's say, just moving into cash, right? And mm-hmm. and I think the key notion, which is different about an option compared to other investments, is that option is a contract. An option has a contractual level of certainty that is difficult to achieve through other investment solutions, right? So the most likely investment solution outside of an option that most people use is multi-asset investment, right? So they, like, people think asset classes are diverse, and if I as an investor was to invest in several different asset classes, I would have diversification, and the thesis being that, you know, if one asset class goes down, the other asset class will go up, and they will cancel each other, and that's how I will get protection, right? To the specific question you asked around protection. And I think you have to contrast that with getting protection through an option, which is almost like buying insurance, right? So options are sort of the capital markets solution for insurance, where if I was concerned about a certain event taking place in my life, could be damage to my house as an example, I could say I'll purchase insurance that if the damage to the house is more than X, and for every incremental amount it's more than X, I'm going to get paid by the insurance company. There exists the option contract, a put option, which you can say if S&P 500 goes below a certain price X, for every dollar it goes below, this option contract would pay me. So there is this contractual certainty, which is different from the diversification approach, where you don't have contractual certainty, you have more statistical-driven assumptions that these two asset classes are not as correlated, and if one goes down, the other will go up. But as we know in practice, that's just an assumption. You know, something like a 2008 comes around, every asset class actually becomes highly correlated, and everything goes down together. And you know, when you need that protection most, it doesn't exist. So the I think that's, it's important to understand these two different approaches towards getting protection in your investments, and understanding that options provide you that contractual certainty. Now, given that, you can go and get protection for different degrees. As an example, if you were to use the Cboe West managed account offering, the technology-enabled managed account offering, you can pick out any asset class, any ETF, any index out there, and just with a few sliders, you can slide and say how much protection you want and for what time period you want that protection. So you can say, I want protection to the broad market, so S&P 500 as a reference asset. I want it for 1 year, and I can start picking the ranges, how much of the downside I want protected. I can say, I'm okay taking the first 10% of the loss, and then I want protection beyond that. And there's a simple slider. As you slide that slider, it's going to tell you in real time what is that quote-unquote insurance premium you have to pay to get that protection. And you can also put two sliders. You can say, I want my protection to start here, so I want it to start right away. So if the market goes down from here, I'm protected. And I want the protection to stop at 10%. So my first 10% is protected. So you can play with these sliders, and you can customize the level of protection you want. So that's for users who want that flexibility, and they want to play with the tool to discover, you know, the trade-off between how much they want protected and what's the market's price for that. But then at the same time, a lot of users seek more standardized solutions. We have a standardized product where we protect the first 10% over 1 year. So it's already packaged and ready to go. It's on the S&P 500 for you. And so you just click it and buy it. Or we also have a mutual fund that tracks that that investment. So you can just put the ticker of that mutual fund and get that 10% protection.
A lot of offerings. And I think that, first of all, I think the way you described or differentiated, you know, the option product versus hedging, you know, different asset classes was wonderful. And I think we got to get you out on the road, Karan, for the OIC when you have some downtime. If, you know, maybe we can sign you up.
Hey, we benefit a lot from a lot of our users, our customers, our financial professional customers, our end customers, from having benefited a lot from, you know, the resources that OIC has put out there. So the feeling is mutual. I think we love this asset class. We love this space. And I think we share your philosophy of getting good amount of education out there on this, so that more and more people can take advantage of this amazing tools.
Yeah, they're great tools, and the product itself, you know, with its transparency and, you know, all the other benefits, you know, the options market has to offer. I know in part of your language you talk about targeted incomes, which I think you kind of just described on the protection side using the various sliders. And earlier you were talking about some of the complexities, you know, especially that self-directed and maybe individual investors get involved with the option space. And oftentimes I think it's the language itself, you know, the you know, calls and puts pretty straightforward, but you get into the iron condors and, you know, the backspreads and things like that. And really, who cares? That's hocus pocus. You know, the whole idea is, you say, of offering a tool where the investor can just create their upside and downside and forget about all the other noise is I think why, you know, the VEST product is just so important for investors to embrace. How can investors actually get to your product?
So our products are available through partner firms that we have partnered with. So, you know, we are available on certain brokerage platforms. We are available through a very wide network of financial advisors, typically more registered investment advisors than brokerage broker dealers. So if, you know, someone is getting service through a financial advisor, there's a very good chance that our tools are available to those financial advisors to use and customize investments for the client's behalf. And then we also have our flagship products. So we have a protection strategy on the S&P 500. We have a growth strategy on the S&P 500. And then we have an income strategy on S&P 500. We have those three flagship products available as mutual funds. So there are tickers for each of those strategies. And anybody, you know, who has a brokerage account can just put in that ticker and invest in those investments.
Okay,
good. You raised a good point, Joe, about the aspect of, you know, getting lost in some of the details and technicalities about these investments. And I think we discovered this as we went about building out the managed account product. We invested a lot in usability research where we would, you know, take any simple lay option investment and try to, you know, try to ask a person in a coffee shop in Mountain View, California, if they understood that investment. And it was amazing how I think we've sort of sometimes get so bogged down in the details by describing this is a call option, this is a put option, and like you said, coming up with complicated terms like iron condor and butterfly and what have you, and getting into strike prices. And I think these are essential details for the right time. But first and foremost, the investors, what they care about is, what does it do for their investment goals, right? What is it that the investor is looking to achieve? And if you can translate the impact of the investment strategy to the investment goals in a simple language, like, you know, this is how your upside changes, this is what how your downside changes, change the language so it's more colloquial language, it's everyday language that people can understand. And then as a result, express the entire product in that language. I think it's amazing how much of a difference it makes. It makes the barrier to understanding a lot lower. And that's something that we've really embraced, not only in our self-directed investor or end customer-oriented products, but even our institutional customer products. I think even institution investors, they appreciate how much the investment, when it's expressed as what will it do to their portfolio, what will it do to their investment goal, they embrace that a lot better than, you know, this is an iron condor strategy as an example.
Well, Karan, I think that is a beautiful note to end on. You and your team have created such a user-friendly options product. And as you say, with a low barrier to understanding. And we really want to thank you for bringing that simplicity and visualization to the marketplace. We thank you for joining us today on Profiles and Perspectives. And listeners, that's the Cboe VEST product. Be sure to explore it. Karan, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Joe.
It's time to upgrade your options toolbox with cutting-edge trading platforms, devices, and information. It's time for tools, resources, and good reads.
In today's tools, resources, and good reads, I'd like to start with new additions to the OIC website found at www.optionseducation.org. Under the tools and resources bar, you can find all kinds of great tools and resources. Currently, there are 20 there. You now need to look for the Covered Call Strategy Builder and also the Collar Strategy Builder. With both tools, enter the stock, index, or ETF you wish to work with. Pick an expiration using the slide bar and just click the build button. You'll get a nice visual pop-up that displays upside income, downside protection, basically position outcomes. As is the case with most tools, try to spend time investigating the various functionalities. The time invested, I can almost guarantee you, will likely offer a handsome return. Today's resource is a bit different from our usual offering. The new financial advisor study conducted by OIC is obviously geared more to the advisor or RIA than the typical retail investor. Now, the reason I'm talking about it, and that is the OIC Cerulli Financial Advisor Study, is twofold. First, it's a quick read with great insights to the advisor, but two, for the retail investor, many of whom work with advisors, it offers insights into how options are used by advisors, how often they use options, how they actually use options to differentiate themselves among their clients. The study offers plenty of insights for retail investors to consider and then turn around and talk to their advisors about. So that's the OIC's Cerulli Financial Advisor Study, which can be found at our website, optionseducation.org. Go to the search bar and enter Cerulli, C-E-R-U-L-L-I. The third, pop-up that, shows up will be a PDF with the entire OIC Cerulli Financial Advisor Study. And then finally, today's good read is an old favorite and classic, but not for beginners. It's Larry McMillan's Options as Strategic Investment. Written many years ago, it's had at least five editions. It's a great read for the serious options user. So that's it for today's tools, resources, and good reads.
It's time for a nostalgia break. It's time to take a look back.
In today's looking back, I'd like to tell the story of options industry volume growth from inception 1973 to now. So back in April of 73 on the first exchange, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, there were 16 companies who had options listed. And many of you may not know, those 16 companies only had calls when the industry started. We didn't have puts. The SEC didn't approve puts until 1977. So, we slogged along from 73 till almost 2000. As an industry, we never traded 500 million contracts over the course of any of those years. Even if you go back to the high-flying, mid-80s, when, we had the crash where the market was down 23% one day, we never got to 500 million contracts in a year. Fast forward, and I'll fast forward actually to 2011, the summer of 2011, August specifically. That's the month that the U.S. lost its AAA credit rating. And in that month alone, August of 2011, the industry traded well over 500 million contracts in that one month. That year, the industry traded all-time records in terms of volume. We traded over 4.6 billion contracts that year. And really over the last five, six, 7 years, the industry has kind of flattened out in its option volume in the 4.2, 4.3 billion a year range, which turns out to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 16 to 17 million contracts trading a day. So, and despite, that is despite these really low, you know, volatility levels in the marketplace, options industry volume has remained constant. So let me back up a little bit. Just, you know, we basically went from 73 till 99, 2000. You know, it's very slow, but, you know, kind of steady sideways growth. It was really in that 99, 2000 period where a couple things happened. Many of you may remember that was the technology boom. You know, had we the NASDAQ trade as high as 5,000, which, you know, it took about, I think, 16 years for the NASDAQ, you know, to get back to that level. So we had clearly a lot of volume in that period, a lot of high-flying stocks. But in the options space, we had a couple real fundamental changes that I personally think, you know, had just not forced but enabled the options industry volume to explode. And those two things were, number one, the creation of the first electronic exchange, the ISE, founded in 1999. The ISE gave all investors electronic access to the marketplace. And with that, additional volumes because of, you know, the speed with which investors could get to the marketplace. At the same time, from 73 up till 99, if you wanted to trade an individual issue, you had to go to one exchange. Take IBM as an example. IBM was listed on the Cboe. If you wanted to trade IBM options, you had to go to the Cboe. Well, in 99, 2000, actually in Philadelphia, on the Philadelphia Exchange, Dell Computer was one of those hot, high-flying tech companies, and different exchanges began to list Dell options. I think it was the fall of 99. And it wasn't too many months later that many of the exchanges, there were five at that point, I believe, began to dual list, was the terminology, different companies' options that were traded on their exchanges. So we had a combination of technology and electronic access to the markets with, you know, more competition. Instead of one bid offer spread, we had probably five bid offer spreads, you know, for the companies that were dual listed. So with that, we got tighter spreads, greater access to the marketplace, and option volumes basically soared from, you know, 500,000 a year to, you know, close to 3 and then ultimately 4 billion contracts a year over the course of about 7 years. So as I said, we're currently, you know, on pace similar to last year, plus or minus a couple percent. And that brings us in at about 4.2 billion contracts. Now, you know, we've got plenty of time left in the year, so things could change up or down. You know, it's hard to imagine that volatility could get any lower. I mean, it may stay at low levels, but I don't know how much lower it could go. And typically, option volumes, you know, contract a little bit, you know, when volatilities are low. So, you know, we're averaging that same 16 to 17 million contracts a day, even in this low volatility environment. And I'd suggest to you that someday, you know, volatility will come back to the market. I don't have a clue as to when, but when that happens, I think option volumes may, you know, break out of this trend in the 4 billion to 4.3 billion range, which breaks down to that 16, 17 million contracts a day. So that's a little background and a chance to look back on today's OIC's Wide World of Options.
Investors should know that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting www.optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. OIC makes no recommendation with respect to any financial firm. OIC does not make any warranty as to the accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the continued availability or existence of information created or or maintained by others. Multiple leg strategies involve multiple commission charges. Opinions and strategies expressed by others are not necessarily those of OIC, nor does OIC endorse, warrant, or guarantee products, services, or information described or offered by such firms. Commissions, fees, margins, interest, and taxes have not been included in any of the examples used in this show. These costs impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential consequences. None of the information presented in this show should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. You've been listening to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. If you have questions about anything you heard on today's show, email Joe Burgoyne at options@theocc.com. Or you can call OIC's Investor Services at 1-888-OPTIONS. Interested in connecting with OIC on social media? Like the OIC page on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter at options_EDU. Or join their group on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out our next episode of the Wide World of Options.
The preceding program was a production of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options, facebook.com/The Options Insider, or via questions@theoptionsinsider.com.